There's a question that I was asked about 20 years ago that still haunts me a little bit. And it was in one of those one-on-one discipleship relationships that we were talking about earlier. I had a guy I was meeting with that was discipling me. And at one point, he got so frustrated with me continuing to have the same issues over and over again that he finally broke. And he looked at me and he said, "If we have the same conversation again in a year, will anything have changed?" And I circle back to that question every couple of years, and I think about it as a little bit of a challenge of where are we actually growing? Are we staying stagnant? Are we staying in the same place, or actually going somewhere? Are we actually being transformed, or are we just standing still? Our scripture this morning deals with that idea of what it looks like to not be stagnant, but actually be transformed. And I think about this, you know, today is Super Bowl Sunday, and I've already seen some rebel gear this morning, won't point fingers or anything, but, you know, I have to admit, in the presence of God, in the presence of all of you, something you may or may not know about me is that I'm a Patriots fan. Boo, yeah, I was waiting for it. All right, and so this is the time of year that I don't get invited to a lot of Super Bowl parties because the Patriots are there like pretty much every year and nobody likes the Patriots. And so we had to do one at the church so that I could get invited to one. So, but when I think about football, I think about Super Bowl Sunday. A lot of people, you're there for the snacks. You're there for maybe not s'mores, but other delicious things. For other people, you're there for the commercials. But for people who are deeply invested in the game, we all can point to moments of significant letdown by teams that we root for. As a Patriots fan, I've experienced a couple of instances like that. The David Tyree catch was horrible. Seahawk fans, you'll probably see this about 18 more times tonight. The Malcolm Butler interception, incredible, wonderful moment. I won't get started with the Falcons and the Patriots. I'll just be kind for the day. But I have to say, my biggest letdown as a sports fan was actually not in the NFL. It was related to being a Georgia fan. And it was a little football game played in Atlanta in a godforsaken building against against a team that has just been a nemesis. And we played that game, and Emma and I went to that game, and if you know what I'm talking about, you know it was the game that Georgia had won to win a national championship, and then Tua, second and 26, I mean, I've heard it a million times since then, throws a ridiculous pass to a wide-open guy, and Georgia loses the game. Now, that was devastating for pretty much every Georgia fan, but imagine being at the game. Now, my first thought is this. We spent how much money to be here to see that happen? I mean, that was the first deflating part. But here's the other deflating part. We had to get home. We had to get out of that stadium. We had to figure out a way to get back to our cars. And so we had ridden MARTA to get there. And we ended up, this is gonna be shocking for some of you, but MARTA was not exactly efficient on that particular occasion. And so there were all sorts of issues with the public transportation. And they ended up having trains break down at the stations. And so what they had to do was they had to send you to a different platform in order to catch a train going the right direction. But the only way to get to that platform was we had to essentially sprint up a down escalator. Okay? Now, if you've ever tried to do that, it is one of the most difficult things in the world to do because the motion is moving against you. The motion is moving in the wrong direction. You're trying to go that way and it's coming this way. Now, if you want to really feel sorry for someone, not me, about being crushed after a sporting event, Emma was only a few weeks removed from a C-section, and there she was having to go up that down escalator. I mean, it was incredibly painful and awful, and we were just sitting there, you know, sobbing about the game. There are Alabama fans there just like, we're like, we don't even want to look at y'all. I mean, it was a rough experience. But I always think about that experience of trying to go against the grain. And I feel like a lot of times that's what our spiritual lives are like. It would be nice if it was just like a smooth staircase that you could just kind of walk up effortlessly or walk down effortlessly with no traction one way or the other. That would be simple enough. It would be even better if you were going the same direction as the escalator and you were moving with the motion that you were going in. But for a lot of us, spiritual growth and transformation feels like going against the grain of an escalator going the wrong way. and we feel stagnant in that, and we feel as though we can't get to where we're going. So the question for us as we look at this passage, as we think about what a truly transformed life looks like, is how do we break free from a pattern of stagnation into one of growth? How do we move beyond those feelings as though we are going against the grain and actually move into growth? Now, when we look at the passage, Paul is writing to the Romans, and this is toward the end of the book. And so he has already like really set the stage about what the spiritual life looks like, about what the challenges are to having a spiritual life. He's talked about the nature of sin and how sin corrupts us all and how we have to break free from that. But fortunately for us, we have been given the gift of Jesus. Jesus has broken us free from that. And so he begins this with kind of like a big therefore. This is one of the three big therefores in Romans. And he says, therefore, so it's kind of like, in light of all of that we've talked about sin and death and about how you've been freed and forgiven through Jesus Christ, and you can live into freedom because of Jesus. He says, therefore, here's what you need to do in response to that. And he says, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. So just to pick a few things out of this, so to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. So automatically, he has begun this statement of, therefore, in other words, in light of everything we've talked about, in light of the forgiveness and the freedom and the grace that you've been given, this is how you are to lead your life. And the very first thing he says, in light of God's mercy, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. So automatically, we're doing something that feels against the grain, that feels countercultural, feels outside of ourselves. But he describes it as this, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Emily mentioned earlier the idea of worship is a lifestyle. Worship is more than what we do in this room. Worship is more than what happens in the sanctuary an hour or so from now. It is something that is a part of our daily lives. It is us giving ourselves to God, giving ourselves to something bigger than ourselves. And so what if we want to live into the freedom that God has given us, it's going to require of us giving ourselves. And so we give ourselves to God. And so then he continues, he says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. In other words, the pattern of this world is an escalator moving at a rapid pace against the direction of God's will for our lives. It is moving against us. And what we are going to be tempted to do is just go with the flow and go the direction that that rapidly paced escalator is going. And what ends up happening is we end up feeling stagnant. We end up feeling corrupted. We end up feeling as though we are going against something that we cannot fight against. And so what we are called to do is be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so how are we transformed by the renewing of our mind? Well, one of the ways that we're transformed by the renewing of our mind is what we're doing right now. We're studying the scriptures together. We're worshiping together. We are standing in opposition to the pattern of this world. We're looking for a different way of living that's different than the grain and the direction that the pattern of this world has. He says, but when you do that, he says, then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good and pleasing and perfect will. So in other words, what Paul is saying here is that there is a pattern of this world. And that pattern of this world, as he's already described within the book of Romans, that's been built up by this point, the pattern of this world is selfish, it's corrupt, and it is designed to keep us from moving in the direction of growth and moving in the direction of transformation. So here's what we are called to do in response to that. We are to offer ourselves, and when we do that, we move from a stagnant and selfish corruption towards transformation. That's what it looks like. We move from that stagnant, selfish corruption, the pattern of this world, into transformation. And transformation will change us, and transformation will enable us to live into God's purposes for our lives and to live into what his will is for our lives. So what does that look like? Okay, so we talked about, all right, we're going to renew our minds. We're going to engage in discipleship together. We're going to engage in worship together. We're going to study the scriptures together. We're going to pray together. Kinchi led us beautifully in that just a moment ago. All of these things are renewing our mind so that we can move in the right direction and move against the pattern of this world and be transformed. But there's more to it than that. And so that's why Paul keeps going. In the next verse, he describes it this way, verse 3. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourselves more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you. I'd encourage you to read the next few verses on your own later today, because it talks about different ways that we can live that out. And then we get to verse 9. Love must be sincere, hate what is evil, cling to what is good, be devoted to one another in love, honor one another above yourselves. Now, here's what we are called to do. These verses move us from self-transformation to a transformative love. Now, here's the way that I like to think about it. We talked about that whole worship, grow, serve movement, okay? So when you think about worship, grow, serve, if you want to experience the presence of God, you can pray, you can worship together, and those are great ways to experience the presence of God. If you want to experience the knowledge of God, you can get plugged into discipleship, you can go to a Bible study, book study, all of those are going to help you understand the mind and the knowledge of God. But if you want to live into the heart of God, it's going to require you doing something beyond yourself. It's going to require you to move from just your personal transformation, your personal mind being shifted, into I am now being shaped into a person that is described as a person of love. I am taking the way of Jesus as the pattern that will organize my life instead of the pattern of this world. And that inherently means that we are moving away from selfishness and stagnation and this pattern that wants to move us in the wrong direction away from the will of God, but we are instead moving in the direction of demonstrating love. John Wesley, founder of the Methodist movement, he described this as a process of sanctification. In the process of sanctification, we grow from our experience of God's salvation in our lives, and we grow in that salvation by moving beyond just giving thanks for God saving us, but moving instead to the way of we are going to demonstrate the love of God towards others. Being perfected in Wesleyan terms and in biblical terms is not about moral perfectionism as much as it is about being perfected in love and love of God and love of other people. And so that's the movement that we make. Now, in the life of our church, we have different vows that we make when we join the church. We've got some people joining at the next service. Prayers, presence, gifts, service, and witness. And there's kind of a progression to it. So prayers can be both inward and outward. Presence, that's your presence here in worship. That's both an inward and an outward experience. You do it in community, so it's got an outward element to it. Everything else that's a part of our commitment to be a part of the life of the church is outward in nature. When we give to the church, when we give to these missions that Emily was talking about, when we give to different causes, we are giving beyond ourselves. We are self-sacrificing, and we are demonstrating love by the ways that we are investing in things beyond ourselves. When we give an offering to the church, that is an act of love. When we support a ministry or a mission, that is an act of love. It is denying ourselves and giving to God and giving to others in a way that causes us to go against the grain and the pattern of this world. When we serve, that is an outward movement that is benefiting others. Now, we benefit from it. We benefit from the experience of serving and being engaged in ministry, but it is an outward movement. And then our witness is what we do in sharing our faith with other people. Now, this is the one area that if I had to challenge our church, is probably the area we need to grow in the most. I think we were already pretty good at discipleship when we formed that statement a few years ago. Emily talked about the ways that we have grown in our missional service and outreach. We still need to grow in the ways that we share our faith with other people. And that is a completion of the idea of what it means to be a transformed life. I have a friend who lives in England, and he lived in Scotland for a few years. And when we were talking about the campus ministry that we were a part of, he kind of lamented that they weren't really big on evangelism. I said, well, yeah, our ministry was really big on worship and discipleship. That was what we were really good at. And so we focused on those things. And discipleship was really the key and the focus of what we did. And so that's why that ministry exists. And he said, yeah, but as I've traveled around the world, what I've realized is that people who study the scriptures realize that your discipleship is not complete until you've learned to share your faith with others. And I was like so challenged by that. I was like, man, that is an incredible challenge to move beyond just discipleship being for me and for my transformation, but that I am supposed to transform others by sharing my faith with them and being a part of that witness. Now, when we think about the statement, the big long statement that we put up on the screen earlier, there are a couple of parts in there that aren't really in different colors, but I've underlined them on this version. Meeting the needs, that we exist as a church, not just for our own needs, but to share and to engage in the needs of others. And so we do that by engaging in these acts of service and these nature of outreach and these different ways that we can be engaged in the way that we serve and the way that we help others. Now, the scripture ends this way, the part that we read this morning, and it says, "Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer, and share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality." What you see within those verses is this idea that as we serve the Lord, we keep moving. We keep moving with a sacrificial hope. We keep moving with a sense of we are going to share the love of God. We are going to share the hope of God. And we do that in kind of a sacrificial way. And so we keep moving in that way. And all of this, what it demonstrates to us is this idea that faith, that our faith will grow as we engage in a love that stays in motion. Our faith will grow when love stays in motion. Now, when I was growing up, I grew up on a 5-lane highway that ran through the middle of Macon, Georgia. It was one of the main arteries that ran through Macon. And it was not very conducive for learning to ride a bike. And so I never really learned to ride a bike. I've tried to get up on a bike a few times since then, and I just kind of wobble a little bit and eventually just fall down. But the times that I've been successful, here's what I've learned about motion and how it works. That as long as you keep moving in the right direction, it helps you stay balanced and it helps you stay moving in the right direction and doing what you're supposed to do. And faith is a lot like that. When we continue to grow in these ways, engaging in the transformation of our mind through our worship, through our discipleship, through being engaged and activated in service, when we keep that in motion, that is what keeps us moving the way that we are supposed to move, much like the balance of the bike keeps you moving in the right direction. And as long as you have that motion and that inertia working together, it will help you stay on track and stay in the direction that you're supposed to go. And so our challenge for our faith is we want to have an actively engaged faith. We want to have a faith that's not just a one and done kind of experience, but a faith that continues to move against the grain to the point that our will and our lives become so aligned with God's will and God's purposes that it feels, instead of going against the escalator in the wrong direction, as though we are walking in step with the direction that God is moving our lives in and moving towards the way of hope. And so we want to be people of hope who live into that. We can engage in all of those things by getting plugged in and serving in different ways, being engaged in community. All of those are different ways that we can be engaged and grow in that way. Now, we're going to share with you this morning, we've got a friend of mine who's here to share about a way, just a very specific way that we can be, you can come on up, John. We can be engaged in an act of ministry and something that goes beyond ourselves. And so John is here. Emily shared with you earlier today our list of people that are printed in the bulletin that we kind of have ongoing partnerships. We also have different organizations that we have engaged with for special projects. And so last year, a friend of mine who lives in Zimbabwe that I've gotten to know through the Global Methodist Church, wish I had a picture of James up there, but I don't.
I have one.
You have one. Okay, great. All right, so my friend James, who lives in Zimbabwe, he reached out to me along with John and said, "Hey, we're starting this Hope Center in Zimbabwe. Would your church like to be a part of it?" And so they just needed startup funds. And I was like, sure, we've got some funds available. Our church can support it. Me and my wife, we can personally support it. This is a great mission. This is where I know the people on the ground, and I know where those funds are going, and I trust what it is. So our church was a part of this. So tell me how our church was a part of this and what we were able to help start.
Well, it's great to be here at Valdosta First Methodist today. I bring greetings from St. Augustine, Florida. It's still there after 500 years. Come see us. I'm at the Global Methodist Church down there in at Bridge City as a member who's never there, who's always on the road. So thank God you're here today. We really appreciate this church. My family brings greetings as well. I think we have a picture of them. So that's my my daughter Trinity came with me to keep me on track today. So thank you, Trinity. My wife, Rachel, and my daughter, Annika, are down there suffering for Jesus in the warm weather. So we had the great opportunity this past year, as Pastor Anthony just said, to see expansion in Global Methodist Church Zimbabwe. Like you, they had to make decisions the past few years, the Methodists there. Unlike you, they could not take their buildings with them. So when they started churches, they just walked outside and got under a tree with 12 or 15 people and started churches. So one of the churches that we got to know through One Child, an organization I've been involved with for several years, was a church called Asbury Methodist Church. We got to talking to the folks in Zimbabwe at the Global Methodist Conference in Costa Rica a year and a half ago. We were able to start hearing about this great little church that had several kids workers, not a lot of kids, and no pastor, but they had passion. So we got to talking to them and said, well, what could we see God do together if we were to start a child sponsorship program, get your kids workers on staff, and get you get the church going and moving in a great direction. So Zimbabwe is a country that is in southern Africa. It has several million people. It's had lots of difficulties over the years, but our ministry, which is multi-denominational, has been there for 14 years. So, 14 years now. And we had 13 centers until this 14th one came up. And the opportunity came with the Asbury Methodist Church. I have some pictures of some of their team, Mary and Sheila and Princess. And there's James right there standing there with them, the lay leader for GMC Zimbabwe. They got on the team and got moving and got kids into a kids club. Matter of fact, a school let them into their school, public school, gave them an office and said, do your kids club here. And you can work here for the gospel in a public school. So I have a picture just talking about the Josiah School. This is what y'all gave to. About 15 churches came together and gave around $1,000 each. It's the first sponsorship center in Africa. There's 1,000 kids in this public school that was open to the gospel. Imagine a Christian club that would let you be on campus 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, not 24 hours a day. And so our kids workers got hired full time and got 200 kids into our program. And of that, just the last 9 months, we've gotten 103 of those kids sponsored. Have a picture of their pastor as well. Actually, some of their team. There's the team, Sheila and Mary and Precious, and then their director, Pastor Chippo. I was just there in December to see the work. And that church in 9 months has grown from 15 to almost 200 people. As they're ministering to these kids through child sponsorship, through Bible club, they're bringing their parents to church. And the thing is just blowing up and exploding in a good way. And they've been able to rent a little building they're in now, and they're packing that thing out every Sunday. So a lot of churches have been involved in that, and y'all have as well. So thank you so much, Valdosta First, for being a part of that.
All right, so tell us about One Child. Like, what do you guys do, and how are people involved with you?
So child sponsorship, a lot of y'all have heard of that kind of stuff. You may have gone to Winter Jam or something like that, or a Carrie Job concert, and you've seen different groups like Compassion International and World Vision. One Child's been around over 60 years. We also do child sponsorship. We're a bit smaller. We don't go on the big concert circuit. We have a couple of bands that do that, like Selah. And unfortunately, you're not running a Christian band somewhere. We'd have you doing it. But thankfully, he's a pastor. We know he can also lead and worship and sing and all that good jazz. But honestly, what we're able to do with child sponsorship, very similar to other organizations. We help pay, every kid in the program gets their school fees paid because school's not free in Zimbabwe. They get clean uniforms, new uniforms every year. Oftentimes a kid that doesn't have a new uniform gets it handed down 6 or 7 generations of cousins. They get help, they get health support, so healthy meal at school. Not every school has. They have kitchens, but no food, so we bring food for all the kids, clean water, health checks, health care, which is not free. And all of that work, this is how we're a little bit different, all of that work is carried out not by, you know, we don't put out a LinkedIn survey to hire the best people in the country. We ask the local church, who do you want to do this work? Mm. And that's how we're different. The Asbury Methodist Church does the work. They're not asked to help us. They do the work. And they grow the relationships with the kids. They are growing the faith of the community to the fact that, like, I was there, Mary and Sheila, all the kids called them auntie, auntie, auntie. And then Pastor Jacob, their pastor, who was sent by the Heartland Conference of the Global Methodist Church out of Kansas, he just moved there. They asked him to be the pastor of the school for 1,100 kids. And they gave him an office at the school. Right there. So the relationships and faith just skyrockets when you're taking care of the physical needs of the kids. I did this 2017. I went for the first time. I said, well, I should probably sponsor a kid. So I found a just service like this. I found a picture of a kid, and he was 15. His name was Nobile. Look at him wearing that fake NFL football jersey, Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah, it's a pain to be a fan. Some of y'all might have left the Falcons for them, but I'm with them. So I know you're stuck with them on South Georgia TV. I'm so sorry. But you know what? We got to know him when he was 15, sponsored him, sent in our $44 a month, wrote letters to him. He wrote letters to us, prayed for our kids. We got our tax return every year, and we're like, this is some of the best money we spend. Then we got to meet him a couple of times. Matter of fact, I went to meet him twice. My wife met him once, and then just this past fall, after he graduated high school, after he left our program, in 2025, he graduated Bible college and junior college as an agronomist, and now he works for One Child Zimbabwe. It's crazy what God has done. That was like the best I ever spent on ministry in my life. And so we have that vision for GMC Zimbabwe, that all those little kids are the future and present of the Global Methodist Church for Africa. And they are just part of the fastest growing Methodist church in Southern Africa right now.
All right, so there's a church in Zimbabwe that's running the center that we were able to help get up and running through our contributions and many other contributions. And that church is actively doing the work with these kids.
All the work.
How can we, as a congregation, continue to be involved in the work of One Child in Zimbabwe?
Absolutely. We've gone to around 15 churches the past few months to talk about just this. We go to churches and do a child sponsorship opportunity. So I sponsored a kid because my kid graduated and got a job. I said, you're no longer on the payroll for child sponsorship. So I sponsored little Joab. I brought my 15-year-old with me on a mission trip in December. We met Joab. He's at the Asbury Methodist Church. Sweet kid. Wants to be a cook one day when he grows up. So come on, somebody. I'm all about that. So we have these pictures of kids here on the back table back there, and you can just scan a QR code. Your data is all protected securely. You're able to communicate with a kid up to 10 times per year through our digital platform that you'll get email about how to use, and that you get 10 messages a year from them as well. So we have eliminated the postage piece that a lot of you may have seen in child sponsorship. So we have these back here. I have Ashlyn right here. She wants to be a doctor when she grows up because she spent part of her childhood in the hospital with an illness, and she was inspired to become a doctor. And now she's in our program. She's getting sponsored. We're believing for God to see a lot of these kids get connected, not just to something we send out every month, but people we can pray for, people that pray for us, people we can go meet, people we can invest in as we go forward.
All right. So I know we've got a quick video to look at. And I know we've told people in this service to go to Sunday school. And so they're going to go to Sunday school. And so some of them might slip out in a few minutes, but they can stop by and talk to you. And you'll also be in the sanctuary after this service. If they want to stop by after Sunday school, they can do that
as
well.
Yes, they could even select one of the kids' pictures that they want and scan the QR code and see their bio.
Awesome. All right, let's roll that video.